One of the men that I dated, I told him about my life. I said, I'm, you know, I'm a single mom. I just bought my house. I traveled around the world twice, you know, all of these things. And he's like, Alicia, you're industrious enough to be your own millionaire. Wow. And that was like the lightning strike that ignited the forest fire. Like I was like, first of all, it was really interesting that it took a man to tell me that because I never believed it.
You've gotten great at divine working, but what about divine living? Welcome to the Divine Living Podcast. I'm your host, Gina DeVee. You're not alone in wanting more. And here at the Divine Living Podcast, you can expect to be part of conversations from women like us who unapologetically dream big and are obsessed with manifesting our most fabulous lives. The conversation starts now.
All right, all my aspiring authors or established authors, I have an amazing podcast for you. My dear friend, Alicia Dunhams, is gracing us with her presence. She's an international speaker and trainer and motivates tens of thousands of business leaders around the world to play big and produce the business results in life that they want. She's coached thousands of business leaders to write, publish, and market their book during her super cool program called Best Seller in a Weekend. She is also a former international fashion model, super cool woman, friend of mine in Miami who I brunch with on a regular basis. And she began her entrepreneurial career when she wrote her Amazon best-selling book, Gold Digger, Lessons Learned from the Rich Men I Dated. She is just a wealth of information. You're going to love her personal story. You're going to love the professional things that she does. And I just really believe this episode is going to uplift and enrich your dreams, whatever they are. Alicia, it is so great to have you on the Divine Living Podcast. You have been such an extraordinary new friend and pure delight that I have met in Miami. And every time I'm with you here, I just can't spend enough time with you, which is why I've invited you to be on the podcast. So all you divine living queens, you are welcome. And I'm really excited for you all to get to know Alicia like I have been getting to know her as well. So welcome to the Divine Living Podcast.
Gina, it is so great to be here and be in your presence. I am excited for what we're about to speak about.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we know here at Divine Living that every woman has a story. So before we like even get into your amazing and epic business that I know all my listeners are going to be super interested in, let's find out about the woman behind the brand and tell us a little bit about you, how you got started, and then we'll get to where you're at today.
Yes, the power of storytelling. I have so many different stories. I don't know where to begin. It's like the amount of lives I've lived in these 45 years. Wow. Okay. The stories. Well, I grew up in Sacramento, California, and my mother and father lived there. My mom and dad were rebels naturally. I'm mixed race. So my dad is from New Orleans, Louisiana, grew up very poor. And my mom is from England and she grew up very wealthy. So they came together.
Wow. All of it.
My dad walked, I mean, he had a newspaper in his shoes. He was so poor. And then my mom went to a private all-girls school and was born in Windsor. So, and they're in England, obviously, so focused on class and status. That was an interesting mix. Okay. So I was born in Sacramento and lived in California all my life. I would say after I graduated from UCLA, I did something really spectacular. It's one of the best things I've done in my life is I bought a round the world ticket. And I traveled around the world by myself.
Amazing. As a single woman by yourself.
And this was before. This was pre-Facebook, pre-cell phones. This was like, I think Hotmail was just getting started. This was back in 1998-ish. And so I backpacked around the world by myself. I actually did it not once, but twice. I was a travel writer. I actually enrolled someone to hire me as a travel writer so I could go back around the world to again. So that was fantastic. And so I would say like the story and the journey really begins when I was a single mom at 25 years old. I had my daughter. And one day, about a year after she was born, her father decided to leave. And I remember saying to myself when he left, I said, "Ooh, I guess I gotta bring home the bacon and cook the bacon." So there was this kind of declaration that I had that I need to do it all. Mm-hmm. I need to be it all. And that's when I started a business. So I started a business around 20 years ago. She's 19 years old now. And that business is kind of what I had today in different types of formations and evolutions. So really at that point, and just to tell you a little bit more about my story, is going with that attitude, I get to do it all, that I'm going to bring home the bacon, I'm going to cook the bacon. And during that time, as I started my business, I went to a New Year's Eve party. Now, this is a party that my mom invited me to. It was her friend's daughter. Now, her friend's daughter is Nicole Murphy, who was married to Eddie Murphy at the time. So I went to this beautiful party, New Year's Eve party, and my mom's friends were getting together and talking, and they were saying, you know, Alicia, you work so hard. You do it all by yourself. I was a single mom at the time. I bought my own house. I started a business. I bought a Land Rover. It was used, but I bought a Land Rover. So I thought, like, you know, I'm living life and I'm handling it. And I'm doing it all myself. But they noticed this. They're like, you get to be with a wealthy man. You get to be with a man who can take care of you. You get to be just like her. And they pointed over at Nicole Murphy, who was married to Eddie Murphy. And yes, you know, she kind of had a charmed life from the outside looking in. And so I remember when they said that to me, and I just felt completely gutted. I felt so low at that point. And I remember driving home after the party, and I picked up my daughter from the babysitter, and I pulled into my garage, and I just started crying. And I called my best friend and I said, you can't imagine what these women said to me. They said that, you know, I need to be with a millionaire. I need to be taken care of. And then I said at the end of the call, I go, by the way, where do you find millionaires in Sacramento anyways? Because I was living in Sacramento at the time. And I said this because I was like, because it kind of created in me, you know, when someone tells you something and you've been living your life a certain way and then you hear a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of discounts everything that you've been living, but then you're like, well, maybe there's some possibility here. And what I ended up doing is actually a couple of weeks later, I was watching the Dr. Phil show. I worked from home watching the Dr. Phil show, and they had
been on that long. My goodness.
He has been on. This was back in the early 2000s. Okay. I was watching Dr. Phil and they had a whole panel of gold diggers. Okay. And, you know, gold diggers, they're like, you know, I only date rich men and they pay for everything. And it's this whole kind of conversation. And in the front row, there was a woman and she was a dating expert, a matchmaker. And do you know who she was, Gina?
Was it Patty?
It was Patty Stanger. This was before she was the millionaire matchmaker.
Wow.
And she said, you ladies have it all wrong. Wealthy men, they want to be with a smart, successful woman. They don't want to be with someone who uses them. And I have an agency that puts those type of men with those type of women, those type of women, those type of men. And so she gave the information. This is when she had a matchmaking agency. It was not called the Millionaire Matchmaker. And so I kind of, going back to that question I asked my friend, I'm like, well, maybe this is it. Maybe my life would be different. I wouldn't have to do everything myself. It wouldn't be exhausted all the time. Go, 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 lone wolf, being a lone wolf like I was. So I ended up putting my pictures together and sending it off to Patty. And a couple of weeks later, I was contacted by her. And within weeks, I was being flown down to LA, wined and dined by all these wealthy men. And one thing that I noticed in this is I was never interested in like getting married to them or dating them. I was interested in how they created wealth. How they started their business. Mm-hmm. Like I was a whole in the strategy of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would ask them. And then one of the men that I dated, you know, I told him about my life. I said, I'm a single mom. I just bought my house. I traveled around the world twice, you know, all of these things. And he's like, Alicia, you're industrious enough to be your own millionaire. And that was like the lightning strike that ignited the forest fire. Like I was like, first of all, it was really interesting that it took a man to tell me that because I never believed it.
Sure. Sure.
And
how much the culture has us, you know, well, if a man says it's okay, it's almost like permission giving. I mean, just to piggyback for anyone listening, I mean, my mom, God bless her, she was a school teacher. And whenever I'd go into the whatever store, I just would naturally gravitate towards what I liked that happened to be the more expensive items. And she never told me, Gina, you better become rich. She just always said, Gina, you better marry a rich man. It was just part of that generation. And so it never dawned on me that I had a choice to do this myself that the only way to do that was through marriage. So continue.
It's part of our social narrative in which it's like marry rich, marry marry. And I completely rejected that. And even when I was around it, which was fantastic because I was around a new mindset. But I was never like, oh, let me marry this guy or let me like try to, it was
no sparks like, No sparks.
It's like, let me create it myself. And so, you know, with that one, and then, you know, so I dated, and one of the guys I dated, I told him, you know, I'm learning so many lessons from you guys on how to create wealth and how to manifest. And he goes, Alicia, you should write a book. And I said, I should. And that's how it all began.
They were great mentors and coaches, huh?
They were great mentors and coaches. And, and I wrote a book, and the book is called Goal Digger, Lessons Learned from the Rich Men I Dated. And I wrote that back in 2006.
What a cool, like behind the scenes story. I knew that that was your book, but I didn't know the story behind it. This is awesome.
Yeah. So I wrote my book, Gold Digger, and this was before like the words has taken a life on its own. And I own golddigger.com. I'll just say that. So I was like, you know, I would say one of the first.
OG.
I don't know if I was the first, but I was definitely OG, the OG, original gangster, original gold digger. And so through that process, and when I wrote a book and I made it a bestseller on Amazon, and then I looked at the New York Times list during that time. Now, I self-published my book. I made an Amazon bestseller, but I was like, okay, I just launched a book. Now, how do I make money at it? Like, how do I like turn this into something? And so this was back in 2006, 2007. And so I looked at the New York Times list at that time to see what other women were on the list. And at the time, it was Laurel Langmire, the Millionaire Maker. It was Marcy Shimoff with like from The Secret. And there was Christine Comerford. So there's like, you know, three or four women. And I just looked at their websites and I said, oh, they all look like they're coaches or they put on trainings or they're speakers. I'm like, maybe I should come up with some sort of conference. And what I did was back then, I don't know how I got her phone number, but I called Laurel Langmire up. And I said, hey, I just wrote a book. She didn't know me from Adam. Like this was hardly social media was just getting started. And I go, would you come and speak at a conference that I'm going to put on? And she said, yes. She said, yes. And I was like, what? And then when she said yes, and I used that to talk to some other women, I'm like, oh, Laurel Langmire is coming. And then I put on a women's conference. So I put on a women's conference back in, I think it was 2008, and it was called Wealthy Girl Summit. And wow, you know, it was a lot of work to put that conference on.
Those live events are. They sure are.
And for me, it was not a moneymaker. I mean, it just kind of like covered the cost. And I was like, okay, that didn't quite work. So I have a book. I did this conference. And, you know, the money's kind of coming in, but it's not working. And then one by one, some of the women speakers, I had like 13 speakers. They started coming up to me and they're like, Alicia, can you help me write a book?
Wow.
And that's like the genesis of what I've been doing for the almost 16 years now is helping people write books. And that has been a whole evolution as well. So I helped all these women write books. And then I you know, through ghostwriting, and then I launched my Bestseller to Weekend program. And really the rest is history. I've been, ever since then, I've been helping people write books. And that has, and just even recently, the new evolution of that is what I've been doing with women is what I call book writing as therapy. And so it just shows it kind of started with helping people write books. And then I launched Bestseller to Weekend during the 2008 crisis because I realized I need to figure out a way to make money when people were like holding on to their purse strings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I figured that out is because I was doing so much one-to-one work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what that I'm doing one-to-one that I can do one-to-many. And that's when I pulled that into Bestseller to Weekend and I like sold her from the stage. So it has just been an interesting life thus far. I'll say that.
I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Because, you know, as we're talking, every woman has a story and there's a book inside every woman. And I think that for so long, the publishing, I think even still today, I mean, if you don't know better, like the publishing industry can be so intimidating. And it can feel like there's such gatekeepers or, you know, like, well, or who am I to go write a book or whatever the stuff is that comes up. So I love you taking a stand that like, I mean, me now being a published author, you know, like anytime you do something, you're like, well, if I can do it, anybody can, right? Like, you like just start to realize how humanly possible it is. And more importantly, how humanly necessary it is that women like us are sharing our truths, telling our stories, giving of our gifts, and particularly in book format. You know, like our high-end services are cool. Our events, when the world opens up, that'll be awesome too. But everyone can get their hands on a book, which is why I came around to writing my book, because I wanted my message in the hands of more people. And so let's talk about this. So like when you say book writing is therapy, I was like, look, I've been through some hard therapy sessions, but nothing has been as hard as writing that book. So I wish I would have known you when I was writing a book. How is book writing therapy, Alicia?
Well, this is something that I kind of stumbled upon. Obviously, I've been helping people write books for 16 years. And you know, the one thing that you just spoke into, I always say that everyone in the world can buy a copy of your book, but not everyone in the world can buy an hour of your time. Mm-hmm. And something about writing a book, it creates that kind of global impact where people can learn about you and learn your lessons and your framework. And then going back to book writing as therapy is I've been helping so many people write books, you know, CEOs and business owners and what have you. I started to see that a particular type of woman I was being was attracted to me. And these were high performing women, women that from the outside looking in, they had all the trappings of success. And there was something that was holding them back. And as I started working with them and asking questions, because that's essentially what a coach does, is asking questions. Like, for example, one woman that I met, she told me everything about her life, things that no one else knew, no one else knew. And as she told me her life, and this is someone who is highly successful now, but grew up with sexual trauma and things that she's ashamed of and decisions that she made, I noticed that through that process and through me suggesting books for her to read and us meeting together, that she said that was the most powerful journey mm-hmm. that she's been on. And she said she hired therapists before and it was nothing like this. Now it was really interesting. So we, through this process, most of my clients don't write their book. I work with them and then we have it go to a ghostwriter or book doctor to finish it off. And
well, maybe that's more why it's like it's therapy, because I did mine on my own. So
well, exactly. Because
I didn't have I had collaborators that I enjoyed working with, but I didn't have this kind of a mentor. So keep going.
Yes. Yeah, so as she was sharing this, so we just met and she just shared and shared stories and cried and read books and spiritual texts that I would send over to her. And then so she gets her book back. And her husband didn't know anything. Wow. So she told me things that her husband didn't know or her family members didn't know. So I suggested they were going on a road trip. I suggested that she read the book to him. And that night she called me and she's like, oh my God, I read the book. I think we're going to get a divorce. I think we're going to get a divorce. And I'm like, just let him marinate. Mm-hmm. Let him sit with it. And I eventually had breakfast with this couple in Los Angeles. They took me out and this man grabbed my hand and he said, thank you.
Sure.
And I just couldn't believe it. He's very, very, he's like 6'4", attractive, good looking guy. And he's like, you gave me back my wife. And that was so powerful. I teared up because I could just see that this process, and even, I mean, we know that the only way out is through. And so when we live life on the surface, when we live life not going deep into what has happened to us to see the healing journey available that we can eventually get to, it happened for us. Mm-hmm. That we live a surface life. We live a guarded life. And that's what my client said. She goes, people saw her as inauthentic. Because she was hiding her past.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it amazing? The thing that we think is so taboo, the thing that's going to repel people from us, turn people off, and it will for some, but mostly anytime that I've gotten over my own ego or vulnerability and shared, it just makes everything more real, more interesting, more compelling, more relatable. You know, my former mentor, Marianne Williamson, she says, you know, there's only so many scripts out there. It's like when you realize, like, and then that's the other thing, we internalize this shame or this thing, like our story is so different, or, you know, when it's like, it's actually so similar to so many others.
So similar that we have achieved traumas. And I think the biggest thing is, are you in your story? Are you in the traumas? Or are you standing on top of them? Mm-hmm. Have you overcome? And so it really follows the one of the frameworks I use, which is not my framework, is the hero's journey, or I call it the mm-hmm. heroine's journey, is the call to an adventure and going yeah. out and meeting mentors and having helpers along the way, nemesis. And then eventually this whole, you know, spiritual abyss, this like being brought to your knees. And when people are in that stage of that journey, they feel they're the only one there. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, they either stay there, or if they do, they come back and they're like, I don't want anyone to know.
Mm-hmm. Because they're the only one that had a mother like that, or a father like that, or a childhood like
yes.
that, or, you know, or a boss like that.
And that's so true. And the thing about like the closest way humans can come together is this heart to heart conversation, this mm-hmm. vulnerability, is that when you share a piece of your heart, it inspires me, compels me to share a piece of mine. Mm-hmm. And so when you share these, especially with like women who, when they're, you know, my client's very intimidating. She's like almost 6 foot. She's tall, gorgeous, and drives, you know, a Bentley at one time. and you see that, you're like, and it, what it does, it could shut down other people. People could be shut down by that. It's like, oh, wow. She just, this outside looking in, it's like, wow, she's so beautiful and she's driving a Bentley and she has it all. And it's when you share the things that happen to you, it creates those soul to soul, heart to heart connections. Mm-hmm. And it makes it compelling. And so I think that's what's available here when we're looking at our stories, is that when I share something, and it's not that we glorify, or it's a, you know, coming from a victim place, or we're sharing our grievances, or we're airing yeah. our grievances out. It's being able to process it first and see, this is what happened, and this is what I created with it.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's a journey. So the healing journey is a journey, because I worked with another client and we were doing a book, and she does such great things with the world, and she's given back, and she's a philanthropist. And there was a paragraph in her book where she was talking about her ex-husband. And I was reading it, and I go, you haven't healed yet. Just this paragraph. Because she was talking about him in a way that was, there was an underlying disparaging mm-hmm. in a comment. And I go, that bit right there, you get to work on that. And she's like, you're so right. She's like, there's still some, like, you know, residual resentment there. And then when we come from full ownership, and it's like, this whole, even like a basic exercise from, you know, telling your victim story to telling your story, your victorious story, where mm-hmm. you are 100% responsible. Now, when I say this, I don't want to diminish any traumas that have happened in someone's life. I mean, I don't want to diminish that at all. I know that each personal journey is personal and very unique. Mm-hmm. And we do eventually, if we're going to live a life filled with joy, transformation, impact and service, we get to take those traumas and the things that happened to us and see the story, see what it led us to in our life, take full ownership, maybe not ownership of what happened to you, but ownership of how you respond.
Totally. Well, you know, it's one thing what someone else has done to us. And then so oftentimes with trauma, we unconsciously end up doing that very same thing to ourselves when we're not careful. So, you know, what someone else has done to us is their karma and their responsibility and their perhaps poor judgment. And I think that the darkest place in a woman's life actually is not what was done to us by someone else, but it's when we ourselves self-abandon. And the more that we can take what you're saying and like take our stories and take our experiences and take our message and let them be transformed, let them be healed, let us overcome, then we are, you know, if shame was inflicted upon us, then we've got to stop being the ones who inflict the shame on ourselves. If mm-hmm. if rejection or abuse happened to us, we need to stop self-abusing. And when we are there for us like so fully and we're no longer self-abandoning, everything changes.
Mm. I've never heard of that concept in terms of self-abandoning.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you?
It, for me, I learned about it when I was healing my codependency. And when I realized how addicted I was to wanting to get other people to like me, like, because I couldn't function if I wasn't approved of or liked of, like someone else had to give me permission basically to breathe. And what I realized as I woke up to this was, and by the way, like I didn't think I was codependent. That was for like weak, broken people, right? You're like, I was had a master's degree in clinical psychology. I certainly wasn't codependent. So what I realized in that awakening was how much I was there for everyone else. And in my own codependency, I was trying to figure out what they wanted. I was trying to figure out what they liked and who I needed to be so that they would like me and accept me and approve of me, which took me out of the equation. Because I was never asking, what are my values? What do I desire? What's true for me? And in all of that, I consistently self-abandoned. I wasn't there for me and my truth and my desires, regardless of the consequences or what else someone else's preferences were. And so I went through this like really dark time with my family and like severe cutting off, estrangement, rejection. And I think it was during that healing time that I actually read the book, The Heroine's Journey, that I woke up to, oh my gosh, I'm doing to myself what they've done to me. Mm-hmm. Like they rejected me and they abandoned me. And here I was doing the same thing. So that's when I woke up to, and it was more shame-based. It was a darker pit than the depression and shame that I felt from them.
Mm. And then it creates an inauthentic, you know, expression of yourself because you're like,
You're a shell,
essentially. And to me, what you just explained feels exhausting. Like I that's what I was like coming. So
you're
that
thank total survive mode.
Total survival mode, and that's what the world that we live in. I just jumped off a podcast where I was interviewing a leadership author, and we were talking about the state of the world, and
everyone does light subjects over here.
Yes, absolutely. It's like the state of the world and that people are in critter brain. It is critter brain mentality. And it is, and personally, in terms of how I work with clients and the life that I choose to lead is being on the conscious climb. And it's how do I become a better person each moment, moment by moment. And that is self-awareness, comes down to self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And so that was great self-awareness, Gina, that you were able to come to that place. I guess it was the help with people. Was it the help with a therapist?
Oh God, many, multiple times a week. There was no a therapist. There were therapists, there were coaches, there were heroes, there were healers, there were spiritual advisors,
yes,
you
absolutely.
Name it. Uh-huh. They were there. They were there among, you know, a few hundred books later also.
Yes. And it's interesting, but I think we have, it's, you know, I'm totally a proponent of getting help and healers and therapists, and we have it in ourselves. We have it in ourselves. I think all of those people just shine a mirror and ask the questions, and we're able to find the answers. And like everything in life is a practice. And so the more that you're practicing it, so again, they were advisors and guiding lights. And as they start asking the questions, then you can start adopting and modeling that and answering the question. What are your thoughts there?
Yes. Two things. One, because I did have a master's degree in clinical and humanistic psychology, I actually did come from the framework that the answers are within. Mm-hmm. So I sought out kind of humanistic based people, mentors that weren't putting their ideas on me, but that they too followed that same philosophy that I had the answers. So they really facilitated the process very well for me. And at the same time, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Yes.
And, you know, there were times for me of when I could not do surgery on myself. And it felt very good to have someone facilitate that process where I still work with coaches and have people facilitate a process for me. And at this point, sometimes I can do the surgery on myself now. Like I can self-process and connect some of the dots and, you know, where before I didn't have those skills, tools, confidence, and self-awareness.
Yeah. And that's important. And so that's what I live to facilitate and create a container for people and women in particular to have
these books into the world. So much. So how can people work with you, Alicia? Like what kind of programs do you have? If someone's like, I'm sure we've got people listening that are like, I want to write a book, but I don't know where to start. Or I've already started writing my book and I'm halfway through. Are you right for me? Or I don't know. I've already written my book and what do I do next?
So. Yeah, I work with all of the above. So I would say if you're just getting started, go to bestsellertoweekend.com. It takes you through the process and you'll write a 100-page draft book manuscript in a weekend. So that's a great place to get started. And you also can schedule a call with myself or a member of my team. If you're like halfway done, I get a lot of those clients. They're like, oh, I've done or I've wrote my book or I'm halfway done. I have programs to support you in getting across the finish line. So we have all the author services. I talked about like ghostwriters, developmental editors, book cover design to support you. And whether it's self-publishing or even get a traditional publisher, I have a literary agent that I work with to help my clients who are on that particular journey. And ghostwriting, we do ghostwriting packages. So you can go to bestsellertoweekend.com. And if you're interested in working with me as a coach to facilitate the book writing process as a way to heal, as a way to grow, as a way to really catharsis, is I would go to bookwritingastherapy.com.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And where can we find you on all the socials and stay in touch with you as well?
Go to @AliciaDunhams and you'll find me everywhere. And I look forward to connecting.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, Alicia, so much power-packed information in this short amount of time. Thank you so much for your personal story, your professional prowess. I mean, what a gift that you are doing the work that you're doing in the world so that people can get a book out there that's going to impact literally hundreds, thousands, millions of people. You must be like such a proud mama bear every time one of those books get published.
I am indeed a proud mama bear. It's fantastic to be the wind beneath someone else's wings to get their message out in the world because they're just going to inspire more people. So my impact is 10x through the work I do, 100x. Yeah.
I can't think of anyone more emotionally safe, lovely, smart, powerful to work with on this process. So I'm so delighted. Ladies, take advantage. Check out these resources. All the links will be in the show notes. And don't sit on your story. Don't sit on your book. Alicia, any last pieces of advice, wisdom, or inspiration you want to leave the Divine Living listeners?
Yes, don't leave this world with your music still inside you. Let it out. Let your message out. Because when you share your message, you encourage others and inspire others to do it the same.
Yes. And I'm going to close it with this. I want you to all think about the most impactful book you read. Think about the most impactful book you read. And that human, whether it was their first book or their 10th book, they were human, which means they sat there and wondered, is this any good? Mm-hmm. Is anyone going to read it? Is this going to matter to anyone? Has this already been said? Or is this genius? Or has this been said in a way that it hasn't been said before? Or is this going to impact even somebody's life? And when you realize that you getting your book out into the world, it's not just for you and the book advance you're going to get and the fame and the publicity and the fun you're going to have, because all that's there. But you are going to be part of the double blessing, because just like that book that you read that impacted someone's life, someone's going to be DMing you and say, your book changed my life. So don't sit on it, like Alicia said, and let's get some more powerful books out in the world with women's voices like ours. That's what Alicia and I are taking a stand for. So thanks so much for being here. Alicia, it has been such a pleasure as always, and thank you for your time and your wisdom.
So great to be here, Gina. Thank you so much.
Did you love the episode as much as I did? I hope so. I hope that you're feeling filled up and that all your dreams are possible and that you absolutely have what it takes to do this. And I am here for you. I'm here on your journey. And I just want to make sure that you are constantly supported with all things queen, high vibe, positivity, spiritual superpowers, and all the things. So if you have not already gotten in on the free companion course to my book, you know, my book is The Audacity to Be Queen, The Unapologetic Art of Dreaming Big and Manifesting Your Most Fabulous Life. You can get my book. I'll leave the link in the show notes. But I also have a free companion course. Whether or not you have get the book, this course is meant to just support you with really taking a look at who you are and how you can get to where you want to go. So you can check it out at divineliving.com/audacity, divineliving.com/audacity. That link will be in the show notes as well. Like I said, it's completely free. There's videos, there's workbooks, there's a Facebook group. So get in on this good free content, share the link with your friends, and enjoy.